The Letters, Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Welcome to At The Letters for Wednesday, May 3rd. Ben Nicholson-Smith here in Toronto, and I will be joined by Arden Zwelling, of course, later in the podcast. We will talk to Arden about the Blue Jays bats, everything going on with an offense that so far has yet to meet expectations. But before that, we will check in with Shai Davidi from Sportsnet. He's with the team in New York, so lots to discuss with Shai, including an emphasis on the Blue Jays pitching staff. All that coming up on At The Letters.
1-2 pitch is club, deep right field. That is taken Bautista back to the wall, and that is gone. Aaron Hicks gets into one and belts his fifth home run of the season. The Yankees lead it 3-0. The 0-1 pitch hit hard, right field. Bautista doesn't even move. Second deck shot for Brett Gardner, his third home run of the season. It is 5-0 Yankees.
1-2 pitch, this one hit high to right field. Bautista's going back, he's in the gap, he's at the wall, and it's gone. Into the Yankees bullpen. Brett Gardner has hit his second home run of the game and his fourth of the season. He's put the Yankees up 7-0.
We are back on At The Letters and now joined by Shai Davidi from New York City. Shai, how's it going?
Not too bad, Ben. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I've been watching the Jays play the Yankees from afar. You've been there in person covering the series for Sportsnet.ca. And as we talk now, Jays are 9-18. So before we get into some of the really detailed stuff surrounding this team, I mean, what do you make of the first 27 games for this team?
Really, I feel like I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, just like a lot of people, because I don't think that anyone foresaw this coming, at least not to the extent that it's been. And you know, now there, at least now there's a bit more of an explanation, you know, with Aaron Sanchez and Jay Happ on the DL, along with Josh Donaldson and Troy Tulowitzki. But that first week just didn't make sense. And even afterwards, there were just so many games that they could have won, and they didn't get the hit they needed, or they didn't get the pitch they needed. And now they're just stuck in this rescue mode that's going to be really difficult to achieve until they get fully healthy. And, you know, there's no imminent sign of return for any of the four guys. I mean, it shouldn't necessarily be long, but there isn't a date that they can look to and say, okay, well, here's where we start turning the corner. And so they're sort of stuck in the mud right now, floating at a relatively even pace over the last little stretch, but with a massive hole to climb out of. So, I mean, this is going to be a long-term project and a really tricky situation for the front office to navigate.
Yeah, for sure, and in large part because of those injuries. Let's touch on those to kind of get a sense of where the Jays might find some reinforcements in the next little while. When you look at guys like Tulowitzki and Donaldson, you can envision them coming back. But what about a guy like Jay Happ? I mean, at this point, is he looking at potentially having to make some rehab starts too? And what do you know about his situation at this point?
Well, definitely he's going to need rehab starts. I mean, he hasn't pitched since the middle of April, and he's thrown once, I believe, at least at the time we're talking. And that was just a light session of catch. So there's going to be a longer build-up period. This is going to be weeks, not days. And that's tough, you know. And you know, doubling the problem for the Blue Jays is that, you know, Sanchez isn't there too. Now there's some hope that a rehab outing this weekend sets him up for maybe a return of the rotation next week, and so it's only another start, maybe two, that you're covering for him, and that's not the end of the world. But the way their organizational depth is positioned, you know, they have guys who can stopgap a start or two. They don't have anyone who can fill in over a longer period and give the team, you know, a reasonable five innings without letting the game get away. And that's going to be a huge challenge for this team to navigate, because the way that their offense has been, I mean, it's been better of late, but they're not going to outslug bad starts on a consistent basis.
Right. I mean, you look at this lineup, it's often populated with names like Chris Coughlin and Ryan Goins and Luke Maley, and that's on their good days. I mean, at this point, you can't assume that this lineup is going to outslug anyone.
Right. And this was a team that, I mean, they're their strength was starting pitching, but they also should have had the ability to outslug people. And look, it's different too if Jose Bautista and Devin Travis and Steve Pierce get going the way that they can get going. Well, you know, now even without Josh Donaldson, Troy Tulowitzki, you know, you've got some guys who can do some damage. When those two guys get back, then all of a sudden, all right, they're in a position to really go toe-to-toe with the teams that are hitting the crap out of the ball like the Yankees are right now. But until then, they don't have that margin for error on the pitching side, and you know they're not getting enough innings out of the starting rotation, so that's taxing the bullpen. And even with a nine-man bullpen, they don't have enough coverage there. So you know, certain days like Casey Lawrence last week in St. Louis or Matt Lawrence last night in New York, you know they've got to stay out on the mound and take it because they need the outs more than they need more than anything else. So that it's a very complicated situation right now. There are a lot of flaws that have been exposed, and they are better than this, but they can't really be much better than this until they're a lot healthier.
Yeah, and that means probably more starts from spot starters, whether that means Leto stays up or they go back to Casey Lawrence or they go back to the minor leagues. And as you wrote last night, this is a real issue for them organizationally because they just don't have a clear-cut guy to turn to. So what, I mean, none of these options are good options. What is the best option, or what are the options that are potentially, you know, manageable when you look at their search for starting options?
That's a great question, and one that I don't think doesn't have any sort of answer that's going to bring any comfort to anyone. So, you know, really, what you're looking at is, all right, the Blue Jays know what Matt Latos is. Do they give him another start? Do they continue running out there? Do they just, you know, look at the beatdown the Yankees laid on him and say, that's just the product of a ridiculously hot and hard-hitting team right now, and that's an outlier? Or is that a sign the best before date on this has expired? And that's a tough one to answer. And the other thing is he going to be able to give you more necessarily than someone like a TJ House who's being discussed, or Mike Bolsinger, or Brett Oberholzer, or Jared Grubb, or on and on down the line? And in a lot of ways, it's sort of a coin flip right now. And, you know, if you're looking at who's pitching best in Buffalo right now, well, TJ House has probably performed the best since opening day onwards. Jared Grubb's had his moments. Oberholzer has picked it up a little bit. But really, it's a coin flip. And it's not. And the other thing is, it's not just one guy, it's two guys, because they do have two spots that are going to be open, at least until Aaron Sanchez gets back. Perhaps next week, as I mentioned. So, you know, are you going to bring in two new guys and start new, or you say, okay, well, we'll try Latos and we'll try someone else? My sense right now is that they really don't know what they're going to do with this. And, you know, the discussion point was for the May 9th start where it's open right now, will it be Casey Lawrence or maybe TJ House? And now if you're throwing Matt Latos into the mix, well, that's complicating things even further.
So what about Latos? Because you've covered off all three of his starts, all of which came on the road. So he had a start against the Angels that didn't go great, and that's not one of the best lineups in baseball, even if they have Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. And then the Cardinals, when he faced them, weren't really playing well, and at that time, he was able to go six scoreless. And then the Yankees hit him really hard. So having seen these starts, do you think that Latos is someone worth hanging on to?
You know, I don't know. You know, I really don't. I'd like to say, yeah, you look at it, and you know, even if you look at, you know, as we were discussing yesterday, you look at suddenly the expected weighted on base average, and you know, there was a lot of luck in even just getting through the two starts before last night. And the Yankees really hit him. I mean, the one home run, the Aaron Judge, was a Yankee Stadium special in the right field corner. But the other ones were all full value. And there was a lot of contact, but he still sneaks five strikeouts in there. He manages to go four despite getting pummeled. You know, there's enough there that makes you think, well, against the Tampa Bay Rays on the weekend, maybe he can navigate his way through that and give you, five innings with five runs or four runs or something like that. And And it's a bit more of a known commodity than some of the other guys. So it's a really tough call, because if the Blue Jays cut ties with them, then they lose them, and then it thins out the organizational depth even further. And so, you know, they're in a really tricky situation where they have to be careful whether or not they cut bait too soon, just because their hands are tied and they don't necessarily have anything better right now at AAA.
Yeah, and if you cut these guys at the first sign of trouble, then maybe you do run into a situation where that AAA rotation starts running out of arms and you just start running out of bodies. So I do get that. At the same time, I mean, at a certain point, don't you have to try to go to a guy like TJ House over Casey Lawrence? I mean, that would be my inclination at this point, is to think, okay, you've seen Casey Lawrence face big league hitters. The results haven't been good. TJ House, I mean, no one's expecting him to come up here and really excel in the way that the Blue Jays rotation did last year. But if you gave him a shot, I mean, who knows? Maybe he's able to fool people for a few turns, and that can be enough to keep the Blue Jays above water.
Right, and that's why I think you could see one of those two guys, but I'm not sure if you want necessarily both of them in the rotation at the same time. And the other thing about TJ House is that he's got a bit of big league time. He's not going to necessarily get swallowed up by the moment and kind of lose himself and beat himself. He's going to probably make the opposition beat him. And so that's obviously what you prefer, and that works in his favor. And I wonder, too, if it may just end up being the matchup. They'll look at what the Cleveland Indians are going to be bringing next week and say, you know, will they conclude that Casey Lawrence will play better against them, or maybe TJ House will? So I think he's certainly in the mix. There's certainly some deliberation there. Because, as you mentioned, you know, the known commodity isn't great. Again, looking at some of the expected WOBA numbers, you know, he might have pitched into some bad luck. But even if he just pitched true to the contact off him, it was still a pretty significant number.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what's crazy about trying to match up against Cleveland is they've got so many switch hitters, it's almost like pick your poison. I mean, you've got Lindor, Santana, and Ramirez all batting from both sides of the plate. At that point, it's like, you know, how do you even... It's going to be a tough decision for these guys, and the scary thing is there's no clear-cut right answer.
Right, and do you want to throw TJ House out there against Edwin Encarnacion and what's sure to be an emotional return and all that? There's a lot of reasons to stay the course, but maybe you decide to go with TJ House in Tampa and say, look, you know, we've seen what the Matt Latos movie looks like, and you know, we don't need another sequel.
Yeah, all right. So there's the rotation, not looking so good for the Blue Jays, except for on days when Estrada or Stroman start. Liriano, I mean, I guess you get some hits and misses there, but let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. And not to be too much of a downer here, but Jason Grilly, I mean, what are John Gibbons's choices right now when it comes to Jason Grilly?
Not a lot. I mean, you saw him. It's already that, what are we, a month into the season, and he's gone from eighth inning setup guy to keep it close in a fairly one-sided ballgame guy, and even that he couldn't get through last night against the Yankees, and he's in a really tough spot. That slider isn't working for him. The Judge three-run homer that he surrendered was on another slider at the end of a 10-pitch at bat, and you know, it was a pretty good duel. He couldn't get him to swing and miss. Judge kept battling, and finally got his pitch and launched it. And there's going to be a bit of that double-edged sword right now, where Grilly probably needs the innings and needs the batters in order to work through some things and figure some things out, but he's not pitching well enough to justify giving him those innings, and it sometimes has to be a fairly short leash with him out there too, so, as we saw in that game against the Yankees. So this one's really complicated, because it's a veteran guy who was so dependable last season, and you don't want to run away from him too quick, but as we've seen with JP Howell as well, this is true for any manager, but when John Gibbons loses confidence in a guy, he's very reluctant to get him in. He likes to ride the guys he trusts and use them heavily. And that's why you've seen such a heavy workload for Joe Biagini, Joe Smith, Roberto Osuna, and Tapera and Leon have really risen to the occasion and shown that they can get big league hitters out. So this is going to be, again, another very tricky road for the Blue Jays to navigate because it is a veteran guy who was such a big piece for them last year.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess maybe having a 9-man bullpen makes it a little easier to bury a guy. You know, if they do want to avoid using him in leverage, then you have 8 other choices that you can go to. So I, not that they're going to stick with that kind of arrangement, but they could conceivably stick with 8, in which case you can still go to a lot of different guys and avoid using Howell, Grilly, whoever it is who's struggling. You can always turn to someone else.
Right, but I mean, both of those things are, you know, the 9 is obviously unsustainable, and that's unsustainable until they need their fifth starter, and then the 8-man bullpen is going to be unsustainable once their position players start getting back and healthy. So, you know, this isn't something that they can live with forever, but they can bury guys, and right now they do need the extra arms because they're just not getting the innings out of the rotation. You know, Aaron Sanchez, you know, he tried for sure, but you know, eight innings on Sunday, followed by another 4 innings on Tuesday. I mean, that's not ideal for the bullpen. There were 2 more on Monday, and Marco Estrada did the team a solid by getting through 7. But that's a heavy load, and you're going to burn out guys. And you know, if you're playing in too many games where you know you're just getting boat raced and it doesn't matter. I mean, that's not a good sign either. So this is going to be very difficult for the Blue Jays and Jason Grilly to figure out. And typically, what happens is that there ends up being a game where there's a need for the bullpen, and you just have to go to one of the guys who's lower down the totem pole. And Jason Grilly's going to have to wait for those kind of opportunities, make the most out of it, regain some of that confidence, and take off.
Yeah, it just seems like his slider is not moving. I mean, you see it kind of floating in there, and there's the difference in velocity. But if you're sitting on that slider and it's not moving all that much, or it's not in the strike zone, it would just seem that, you know, at least from a distance, it doesn't look like the swing and miss pitch that it was at times last year.
Right, and he's not beating guys with a fastball to compensate.
Right.
So, you know, that's the double-edged sword. And look, you know, if you miss with the fastball a little bit, it's not necessarily ending up in the seats. But if you hang a slider in the wrong spot and it stays flat in a hittable area, it's going a long way, as we've already seen on a few occasions this year. So, you know, a really tough spot. And the other thing, too, is that you can work on it in the bullpen all you like. It's a lot different getting out there, throwing it in game speeds and in game situations. And without the opportunity to test it, it's going to be really difficult for him to work out of it.
Last thing on the bullpen here, what do you make of Roberto Osuna and where he's at? Do you think that adjustment back to the four-seam fastball is going to help him retire hitters the way he did in 2015 and 2016 when he really established himself as one of those top closers?
Maybe. And look, you know, you always like it when pitchers are trying to introduce new things into the repertoire, and you know, any new weapon helps and a new look helps, especially for a closer who can be like he has 3 pitches, but can often be a 2-pitch guy. You know, having that extra look can always help. So it made sense to experiment with it. But you know, you also wondered why was he looking to do that at the same time. You know, sometimes if it ain't broke, you don't fix it. And you know, the 2-seamer got hit a bit during spring training, and then he came back, and there was all the talk about the velocity. It's hard to tell where he's at right now, and he's not getting consistent work because the Blue Jays aren't getting a lot of save opportunities, so it's hard to kind of see him get into a rhythm and kind of really make a judgment. But until I think we all see about, you know, 3-4 good outings in a row where it's like, yeah, that's the reverse Roberto Osuna we know, I think that there'll still be some questions there because, you know, it was a truncated spring training, a messed up beginning to the season with a DL stint, a complicated issue in the back of his neck that obviously was impacting the way he was throwing the ball. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on there, and he's been sort of playing catch up from the get-go. So, you know, I don't know that he's caught up yet. You know, the last outing was a good sign, but I still think there's some caution signs there.
Yeah. So to this point in the season, obviously more bad news than good news for the Blue Jays. If you're looking ahead, say another month from now, what would a good month look like for this team?
Good question. A good month. Everyone's back from the DL or close to it in J-Hap's case. And the lineup's hit, everyone in the lineup is hitting. I think if you have those things going, then you can say, all right, you can realistically start thinking, well, maybe this team does have a chance to pull out of this hole. And it's going to take a huge effort. It's going to be remarkably difficult. But, you know, if all the pieces are there, there's an opportunity for this team to really go on a run and at least make it interesting and see where it goes. And, you know, I know that there have been a lot of projections. Oh, the Blue Jays have to play like this to get to get in the playoffs, and teams that have this record don't get rarely make or never make the postseason. But a lot of that stuff is from the one wild card era or no wild card era.
Sure.
And I think in this two wild card era, I mean, you really have to play badly for an extended period to bury yourself. So the Blue Jays have a chance to make it interesting. And, you know, if they gain, say, four or five games over the course of this month, I think that's a good month for them. And if they're healthy, then they can really set themselves up to make a run.
So if they gain kind of four games in the standings in May and then another four or five in June, then they're 500 by the midseason mark. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
I mean, if they're around something like that, then I think it makes it, it gives the Blue Jays a lot of things to think about ahead of the trade deadline, right? And, you know, I think if it's another bad May and the hole is too big, then the decision-making for the Blue Jays is easy in terms of what they do. It's going to be some sort of pivot. How deep it is, that's open to interpretation. But they can, you know, maybe move a few of their pending free agents, try to get a few pieces back into the system and regroup for another run with this core for 2018 if you wanted to make a minor pivot and not sort of have the fan base revolt on you. At the same time, you know, if they're just sort of floating at that 500 level, then you have to decide, well, is this team legitimately good enough to close the gap and get themselves into the postseason, or is that just a mirage and, you know, they're destined to float around at 500 and maybe you're better off making that pivot rather than trying to add and trying to push through with a group that's just not going to be good enough in the end.
Yeah, because so now they're 9 games under. I mean, if you're 9 games under, it's your hand is decided for you. I mean, you're going to be a seller at that point. Even when the Jays were 1 game under a couple years ago and they're 50-51, that was a borderline decision, and you don't see teams any worse than that adding. So I think that much is pretty clear. But, you know, you talk about making a pivot, and I don't know. Like, I can't really imagine that they would make a huge pivot and just totally blow this up. Even though you hear tons of speculation about that, I just... Can you imagine that? I just have trouble imagining that.
Yeah, I mean... I would never say never, because let's say a team came in and made just an obscene offer for Josh Donaldson, right? Who's pending FA after the 2018 season. I mean, you'd have to really think about that, right?
Okay.
Because that's got a chance to change the course of your organization. That being said, if it's not something that's, you know, like you're getting two surefire prospects. And, you know, look, I think if you look back at what the Blue Jays surrendered, going all the way back to the 2013 build-up for the 2013 season, how many of those pieces do the Blue Jays actually regret giving up?
One.
You know, one, Noah Syndergaard, and the jury's still out on Franklin Barreto, and that's it. You know, maybe Hoffman.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you regret Hoffman.
Right, and especially not for the fact that, you know, you got Troy Tulowitzki for $50 million, you know, when you consider that, you know, the money was spent on Jose Reyes, and you got rid of him in that deal. So, you know, it's really hard to get premium prospects that are going to be surefire. So if the Blue Jays are going to make that move for Josh Donaldson, they would have to be 100% on the guys, completely sold on them. They have to be close to big league ready, if not maybe having some big league experience already. So the amount of guessing that you're doing in terms of how they're going to transfer is mitigated. But that's the only circumstance I can see that playing out in. You know, the reality is that I think they'd want to just pivot, you know, adjust the core, see what they can do in the off season, and with the pieces that they fetch, and take another go at it in 2018. You know, there's something special that's happened with this fan base and the level of engagement they have across the country. I think the Blue Jays are going to be super cautious before they risk alienating that new fan base, because they're young, they're moneyed, and, you know, let's be honest, a good amount of them will be transferable because they're not long-term fans, and their dollars can quickly be diverted elsewhere. So I think that there's a business element that has to play into this as well as a baseball element, and that's why, unless it's a completely phenomenal deal for someone like a Josh Donaldson that you could really sell fairly easily to the fan base, I don't know that you can do it.
Yeah, and not to go too far down the Donaldson rabbit hole, but you would really need a team that, A, had that kind of prospect capital, B, viewed third base as the primary need that they had at the trade deadline, and then C, was actually willing to pay that price and take on the salary. So I just, you know, it's really hard to envision. And obviously we have a long way to go to get to that point.
Yeah, and let's add a D to that. You know, Donaldson's salary is going to be in excess of $20 million, maybe even up to $25 million next year in his final year of arbitration. So the team has to be able to take on that salary for next year as well, in order to make it worthwhile. Now, I mean, the player clearly justifies it, but how many teams have that kind of payroll room?
For sure, for sure. All right, Shai, we know you got a game to cover, so we will let you go. But thank you so much. We will be reading you at sportsnet.ca and following you on Twitter at Shai Davidi.
Pleasure as always.
Pitch to Bautista, hit high and deep to left center field. Ellsbury going back. He looks up, and it's gone. Home run, Jose Bautista, his second of the season, and the Blue Jays now lead it 7-1. Here's a swing and a fly ball. That's it deep to left field. That's going to get out of here. Steve Pierce with his first home run as a Blue Jay.
Well, go ahead. Hit.
Wrestle down the right side. That's a fair ball. Bautista's in to score. Russell Martin has given the Blue Jays the lead.
Well, talk about go ahead hits. That's the guy you run up right there when you need a base hit the way
Russell's. Welcome back to At the Letters, and I'm joined now by Arden Zwelling from Cleveland. How's it going?
What's going on, man? How are things?
Good. Same old here in Toronto, but you're in Cleveland covering off some Toronto Raptors coverage for Sportsnet.ca. How are things going for those Raps?
It's very exciting. They're losing, which is a thing that I've grown accustomed to this April.
Yep.
Blue Jays and now this team. Everywhere I go, the teams seem to lose. But you know, the Raptors are saying today that, you know, they're going to try to come back in Game 2 with a stronger mental focus, you know, a bit more mental fortitude, and try to stop the best player in the world. So we'll see how that goes.
Is there more of that kind of terminology in basketball? Like we gotta really, you know, come with more mental focus. Is that something you hear more of?
Well, you get more like kind of momentum swings in a game like basketball, right? And you do get a bit more of the kind of, yeah, like the emotion and the, you know, when things are going bad, things are really going bad. You know, like you can even just look at that game they played against the Cavs the other night. LeBron's like dunking off the backboard, and, you know, the Cavs are hitting open threes and the crowd's going nuts. So, you know, coaches will use like their timeouts to kind of try to control that momentum. So yeah, it is a bit different than baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to leave that to the professionals, which obviously includes you, but also Donovan Bennett and JD Bunkus, host Free Association Sportsnet's Raptors podcast. So definitely would recommend checking that out. But in the meantime, we'll talk about baseball. So Toronto Blue Jays, 9-18. I mean, let's start really big picture here. You know, 9-18. That's not good. That's not what you want. What are you making of the direction of this Toronto Blue Jays team right now, Arden?
I feel like that's better than last time we talked. No.
Yeah, I mean, sure, yeah. Relatively, yeah. I mean, they've won 3 games since we last spoke, and they've lost, I think, 2?
Something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, I think they're about 500. They've kind of settled into this, like, 500 team, right, over the last kind of 10-ish days, I would say, which is about what you'd expect. And if they do that for the rest of the year, they will miss the playoffs by a whole bunch. You know, they need, like, a real winning streak. Like, it's good that they've settled into this kind of just being a normal baseball team again instead of a team that was, like, dropped 7 straight and couldn't win 2 in a row. But at some point, they need to go to, like, rattle off, you know, 8 out of 10 or, you know, 7 out of 9 or something like that. Like, they need to rattle off some wins just to dig themselves out of this hole. Sooner, preferably, rather than later.
You're saying that starting the season 2-11 wasn't a great idea?
I don't think it helped. I don't think it was a benefit. They need one of those 11-game win streaks. You know, what was that year where they had 2 11-game win streaks? They need to do that.
Yeah, I think that was 2015, a year where they were kind of middling for a lot of the year. The Jays right now wish they were middling. They're far worse than that as we speak. Aaron Sanchez on the disabled list, and you were covering the start where he ended up leaving the game after 1 inning. What were you able to discern about the status of that fingernail and what the next steps would be, how much pain he was in? What did you take away from covering that start?
Yeah, well, I guess the issue was that the nail kind of split, so it wasn't a blister thing, you know? Like, he had this, like, crazy procedure to remove a quarter of the nail lengthwise. So, like, look at your nail and imagine if a quarter of it, like, running down on kind of the outside of the nail was just gone. And he had it removed, and then I guess when he was pitching, the rest of the nail just kind of split open. And it's something that I don't think that they could have predicted or they would have known would happen. You know, there's this doctor, he's a dermatologist in Kansas City. His name's Glenn Goldstein. And he performed the procedure. And, you know, Aaron Sanchez was, you know, in close contact with him throughout, you know, his kind of recovery from the procedure. And he did everything he was saying that the doctor asked him to. I talked to George Pulis, Blue Jays head trainer, a bit about it, kind of off the record-ish. But he was, you know, just
off the record-ish. I don't want to get you in trouble here.
It was one of those in-betweens. So yeah. That's why I'm not going to give too many details. Okay. That's, you know, I was just kind of couching what I'm about to say. But he's kind of saying, you know, look, Aaron Sanchez kind of did everything that was asked of him in that recovery, and they got to a point where they're like, this thing's good to go. Everything's great. And then I guess in the start, maybe even in his bullpen, it began, the nail kind of split. So, I don't know, imagine you've already got a quarter of your nail gone, and then the rest of it starts to forcibly peel off of your finger. Oh. That's going to hurt. You know, that's going to feel pretty bad. And Aaron Sanchez was pretty graphic in describing how it felt. So, you know, it's not good. And, you know, I think a lot of this is going to come down to how that heals, to Aaron Sanchez's pain tolerance. It's really kind of a messy situation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely sounds like it. And between that and the Jay Happ situation, I mean, are you envisioning kind of a medium-term future for this team where we're looking at kind of patchwork options in those 4 and 5 rotation spots?
Calling TJ House, baby.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at here. Look, man, I don't know what your sense of this is, but the fact that there haven't been positive or negative updates on J-Hap, the fact there just haven't been updates on him, that's a little troubling.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he threw Saturday, and the expectation was that he was going to keep throwing. It doesn't sound as though those throwing sessions have progressed to the point where they would really be comfortable putting him on a mound for a bullpen session. So, you know, at this point, you never want to make too many assumptions, but it's obviously not good. I mean, this is something they said initially, hey, we're hoping it'll be 10 days. That's past. I mean, that's not going to happen now. And Happ, you know, he was a really essential part of their rotation last year. The downgrade from him to anyone on any team would be substantial, and especially on this team, because they just don't have the options.
Well, and you just think about the success that Jay Happ has had against the New York Yankees, and he would have started on Tuesday, right, in place of, you know, Matt Latos, who had a very Matt Latos-y start. And so that, you know, that would have looked a lot better if the Blue Jays go on for four games with Jay Happ on the hill. I mean, it just would have, you know, that's ideal. And the fact that, you know, this injury is kind of mysterious in a way, where he's saying, oh, it's grabbing and it's tugging and it doesn't feel right, and I'm, you know, it's making me less effective. And, you know, he goes and gets it looked at, and they say, yeah, there's nothing structural there. It's just inflammation, but he's still been out for a long time. And like you said, sometimes he'll throw and then it might not go well, and they'll, you know, shut him down for a little bit again. I mean, it's not a good situation at all. And I'm really not sure after, you know, if you can throw Matt Latos back out there again. I mean, maybe you can, but even Gibby was saying after the game, you know, I thought he kind of got away with it in St. Louis, and in New York, he very much was not getting away with it. We saw how Casey Lawrence fared against major league competition, and that didn't go great. So, you know, next man up, like I said, TJ House or who knows, maybe you got to kind of go outside the organization, see if you can trade for somebody who is on a AAA roster with another team, you know, some other team's Randy Wolf type.
Yeah.
You know, if people remember how that went for the Blue Jays 2 years ago, was that, or last year, whenever that was.
And Wade LeBlanc, when the Mariners picked him up.
Right? Maybe that option exists somewhere, because the Blue Jays, I mean, the options they have right now are less than optimal.
Yeah. And then you look, you know, you look beyond this series against the Yankees. All right, you've got the Rays. They're not necessarily a powerhouse. The Indians are a very good offensive team. The Mariners have some really good offensive pieces. So, I mean, it's every single series is going to be a grind. You're not going to have necessarily some of those quote-unquote easy series like you might in the National League, where you get a run of Padres and then the Pirates, and you know, you get to beat up on some of these teams that are struggling offensively.
Yeah, you know, like on the surface, the Blue Jays should have somewhat of a soft May schedule. When you look, Tampa Bay, like, is not a terrific team. They've been better than the Blue Jays so far this season. Not a terrific team. You've got four against the Braves. You got two against the Brewers. You got three against the Cincinnati Reds. These aren't great teams. And yet, you know, the Blue Jays played the Brewers earlier this season and lost both. And the Blue Jays had trouble against the Rays earlier this season as well. And they had trouble against a St. Louis Cardinals team that is good, but was playing pretty poorly at the time the Blue Jays played them. The Blue Jays lost 2-4 against the LA Angels, who are also a bad team. So, you know, I just like just kind of looking at the schedule, like you'd like to think the Blue Jays have a soft spot, but with this club, it's hard to really say that.
Yeah, these days they are the soft spot in the schedule for other teams. let's touch on their offense a little bit, because it's been a source of questions all year long, really, when you look at a group that entered the year with some pretty high expectations and now has a couple of key guys injured. So Ryan Goins playing every day in Troy Tulowitzki's absence, had a great game in New York where he was hitting lasers all over the park, hit a home run. What do you make of Ryan Goins? We've asked this question before, but current edition 2017 Ryan Goins, what do you make of what he's doing at the plate?
Well, he's come back down to earth over the last week, I would say. I think he's 2 for his last 25. So, you know, I think that's kind of balancing out from that really hot offensive start that you saw, you know, in April, I guess. But, you know, look, you look at that game in New York, he barreled four balls, and I think three of them went for outs. Jacoby Ellsbury made that crazy catch in center field that two runners scored on. So, look, good for Ryan Goins for, you know, hitting the ball hard, putting the ball in play. But, you know, look, he's still Ryan Goins offensively. I think we know what he is at this point. He's like a 29-year-old man at this point. We're not really talking about, a prospect or a guy that's still growing as a hitter. He is what he is, and you'd rather have Troy Tulowitzki in there than him, but at least he is providing something while he is filling in and really playing every day, because who else is going to play shortstop for you?
Yeah, he's definitely got the job as long as Tulo's sideline, that's for sure. You know, it's weird because in a sense, I look at what Goins has done this year and in my head, he's hit really well. And then I look at his batting line. Right now, he has a 611 OPS, and that's basically in line with what he's done in his career. In his career, he has a 596 OPS. So I guess that's where you start looking at the batted ball stuff to make sense of it. And for what it's worth, I mean, we're still early in the season, but when you look at what his expected weighted on base would be, so based on the way that he's hitting balls, how hard he's hitting them, where they're landing, you would expect him to be doing better than he is. You'd expect a 324 weighted on base. That's about 60 points higher than where he is. So that's at least a sign that all these hard hit balls are, you know, suggestive of better things to come for Ryan Goins. And it's not to say that he's ever going to hit all that well, but I do wonder if there is a little bit more here than what we've seen in his career. A little bit, not necessarily a ton.
Well, yeah, he does have a 190 batting average in balls in play this year.
Right.
So that would tell you that he's been pretty unlucky. And I mean, that's the most Blue Jays thing ever, is that Ryan Goins is putting up good at bats and hitting the ball really hard and getting to his pitch and then just hitting it right at guys. You know, like, of course, the 2017 Toronto Blue Jays would have something like that happen. So, look, you know, it's Ryan Goins is Ryan Goins. I think that, look, the Blue Jays made a decision at the end of spring to go with Ryan Goins over Melvin Upton Jr., and I think that they're feeling pretty good about making that decision right now, not just because of the way that Ryan Goins has been swinging the bat, but because who would be playing shortstop every day if the Blue Jays had, you know, exposed Ryan Goins to waivers at the end of spring and he'd gone somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would be Darwin Barney, although, as you pointed out, I think over the weekend, Darwin Barney hasn't exactly played a ton of shortstop at the big league level, so that would be asking a lot of him.
And when's the last time he did it, right? I don't have it in front of me, but I feel like it's been a while. He won his gold glove at second base, and that's clearly the position he's best suited for. I think he could play shortstop, but is he going to be your everyday answer at shortstop? I mean, I just don't know what he would be defensively at that position. We haven't seen him do it in forever.
Yeah, and I'll be the first to admit that I was wrong on that one, because I thought that Melvin Upton Jr. would be a better piece on this team. And he's someone who, you know, at this point, I believe is battling an injury with the Giants, and they chose to release. Goins, meanwhile, has been very productive in Toronto, and that's clearly been the best decision, because he looks like someone who's definitely worthy of a big league roster spot on his defense alone.
Well, yeah, and when you look back at it, you know, you kind of had redundant pieces in Carrera and Upton and Barney and Goins, you know, to They do kind of similar things. And then I think the decision probably came down to, well, where are we going to need this added insurance more? Are we going to need it in the outfield, or are we going to need it on the middle infield? I think the Blue Jays looked at Devin Travis and Troy Tulowitzki as two players who hit the DL practically every year and said, yeah, we're going to take that insurance on the infield. And look at that. Troy Tulowitzki's making his annual DL trip right now, and Ryan Goins is playing every day.
Yeah, Melvin Upton, for those wondering, underwent surgery to repair a torn ligament in his thumb, expected to miss at least 8 weeks. So not a lot of Melvin Upton on big league fields for the next little while. Blue Jays...
Maybe never again.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Honestly, with these things, it changes quickly. And I think that's the one thing that you're reminded of, is that once the season starts, all those roster setups that we did all offseason, I mean, it all goes out the window because they have to adjust on the fly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how much time did we spend talking about left field in the spring, and we really haven't talked about it at all this year? How much time do we talk about first base, and how, you know, is Justin Smoke going to be able to hit enough to be a first baseman? And Justin Smoke has been one of the more reliable offensive pieces for this club. How much did we talk about Steve Pearce and how, you know, wow, if he has a full season and he's able to put up 600 plate appearances, what kind of a hitter could he be like? And he was pretty much an offensive zero in April. So it really does show you that nobody knows anything, really.
Yeah, for sure. So when you look at this Blue Jays lineup, not a lot of production so far. Do you see anyone in this group that could be poised to do some good things in the near future?
Well, I mean, I was just talking about Steve Pearce. And you look at him with four hits last night, and you know, I think that that's probably a guy who his history as a hitter would tell you that he's going to turn around, or that he should turn around, and he should be better than what he's been to this point. So, you know, that's one guy. I mean, I think that Jose Bautista and Russell Martin have already had their turnarounds, and they've been really, really good over the last 7 or so days, 10 days. Kevin Pillar has been surprisingly consistent, or maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but he's been a guy who's been pretty streaky throughout his career, and this year he hasn't had a big kind of, he hasn't had a real slump. yet. You know, he's just hit consistently, which I think is a really nice development for the Blue Jays. Am I missing anyone?
I would look at Morales. I mean, you look at his numbers right now.
Right.
And so it's dropped off. I mean, to the point where he's hitting .224, his on-base percentage below .300. He has four home runs, I think all of which have come in pretty big spots for the Blue Jays. But overall, the numbers aren't good. And looking at that same table of hitters who have been unlucky so far based on where they are hitting the ball and how hard. And yeah, I admit this information isn't perfect, but at the same time, neither obviously is batting average by any stretch. So this is, I think, one of the better tools that we have. And if you look at it, Morales has been quite unlucky by these measurements. So I could see Morales coming around. I mean, that's hardly a hot take, hardly that bold of a prediction when you look at a player with a very long track record of success who's currently healthy. I think that there are lots of reasons to believe that Morales is someone who could probably start hitting pretty soon.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm with you on that. It's a guy who, he's kept his exit velocity up throughout the season, so that's been good. And I think he has had some bad batted ball luck to this point. So I still expect him to, you know, be a 35 home run guy. You know, that's what I thought he would be coming into the year, and I still think he'll be that. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's a really hot July in there for him, and we'll see if that happens. I think, you know, one of the biggest offensive turnarounds for this team will be just getting Josh Donaldson back in the lineup.
Yeah.
And Troy Tulowitzki, for that matter, as well. I mean, that's 10 wins right there. Josh Donaldson being a 7-win player, Troy Tulowitzki being around a 3-win player, that's 10 right there. And to have that out of your lineup, that really does change the equation for the Blue Jays because, you know, to me, Josh Donaldson's the second best hitter in baseball after Mike Trout. And the Blue Jays really just haven't had the, you know, Josh Donaldson at any point this year, even when he was healthy.
Let's hope Bryce Harper is not an At the Letters subscriber because he might be very, very upset to hear that you think Josh Donaldson's the second best hitter in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell him to call me.
Okay, I'll get on that. As we are talking here, the Blue Jays officially released Jared Saltalamacchia, one of the players that we were expecting to contribute to this Blue Jays offense. Obviously did not happen, and it's actually interesting because last week we talked about Saltalamacchia and the kind of leash that he might have, and they moved pretty quickly to part ways with him. What were your impressions of that decision by the team?
Yeah, you know, they did it. It was faster than I thought it would happen, to be honest with you. But I think that they looked at the fact that, and, you know, no disrespect to Jared Saltalamacchia, but he appeared to not be able to throw the baseball from behind the plate to second base without bouncing it. We didn't see him do that. So that, you know, that's bad, right? And Jared Saltalamacchia was not supposed, you know, he didn't come here to be a defense first catcher. He didn't, you know, come here to be that guy. He came here to kind of hit home runs, and he wasn't doing that either. So I think the Blue Jays said, look, you're not doing either thing. And maybe the defense was worse than the Blue Jays anticipated it being, but they moved quickly on that. And look, when Luke Maley is taking your roster spot, you've done something very wrong. You have really, really not, you know, made your team happy. And, you know, it's too bad for Jared Saltalamacchia because, you know, he was a great guy in the clubhouse. And I think the pitchers really liked him and his teammates really liked him. And I thought he gelled well with a veteran clubhouse, as you would expect. But, you know, I think that maybe Jared Saltalamacchia has hit a point in his career where he is a first baseman / DH or seven catcher. And if he's not going to hit at all, then you can't be a first baseman / DH, and there just isn't room for you on a major league roster.
Yeah, his Blue Jays legacy, 25 at-bats, 16 strikeouts, 9 caught stolen bases attempted, and 0 caught stealing. So, yeah, those results really troubling. The Blue Jays move quickly. Luke Maley, I mean, I actually think that he's going to be a nice little piece. I think defensively he's going to bring a lot to this team, and offensively they're not going to get all that much based on his track record. But I think that you can do a lot worse than having guys like Goins and Maley as your backups. You don't want to be relying on them to get 500 plate appearances a year, but if those guys are in there, based on what we've seen, he can be a pretty solid defender.
Yeah, you know, he's going to bring more defensively, certainly, than Saltalamacchia was. You know, I wonder how long the leash will be on Luke Maley as well. As this guy has only been in the organization for about 45 minutes, right? I mean, I think the Blue Jays are still kind of figuring out what they have with him and how often they can play him. But, you know, backup catcher, it's a real weakness right now, and you know it has been for a number of years. And look, Blue Jays went to back-to-back ALCSs with Josh Tolley being the primary backup catcher, and you know he's not exactly Babe Ruth either. So you know, that worked out, so they could just carry Luke Maley through the remainder of the season. But I wonder if we're going to see another adjustment there, and if the Blue Jays get so desperate for offense, and they haven't been over the last week, admittedly, but if they go into another real cold spell and say a Mike Ullman is in AAA Buffalo and is tearing it up, maybe they look to make a move like that.
Yeah, it's definitely imaginable. So as we sit here today, 27 games into the season, have your big picture impressions of this team's next few weeks shifted at all since our last podcast? I mean, at that time we were kind of saying, okay, they've got to go on a run. Like, that still remains the case, right? I mean, they can't just keep petering along at this 500 rate.
Yeah, you know, they absolutely have to go on a run. And, you know, look, the next few weeks, I mean, really through till the end of June, I mean, the Blue Jays are just going to be playing and seeing what they are. Because, you know, no major league front office right now is thinking about trades. I mean, you're thinking about the draft, you're thinking about international free agents. I mean, that's just what your processes are right now. That's what makes the most sense. And really, I mean, how often do you see a trade in season where both teams benefit today? I mean, those are the hardest trades to pull off, you know. So for the Blue Jays to make some sort of a deal to, you know, try to improve today, right now, they'd have to give up prospects, and we know that's not something they want to do. So look, they're going to play, and they got to go on a run. And if they don't go on a run, we're going to be on this podcast in July kind of building trade packages.
Yeah, well, we'll be on the podcast either way, but that is enough for this week. Arden, thanks for making the time from Cleveland, and we'll talk to you next week when you're back in Toronto.
Sounds good, man.
That does it for another edition of At the Letters. Thanks for listening. If you get the chance, please do rate and review on iTunes. Always appreciate those ratings and reviews there. We have lots of coverage coming up. As we mentioned, Shai is in New York City. He is covering the Blue Jays there. Arden is in Cleveland. He is covering the Raptors there. This weekend, I'll be in St. Petersburg covering the Jays and Rays series. And then after that, Edwin Encarnacion returns. We'll have all kinds of coverage about that and the Blue Jays series against Cleveland. So stay tuned to sportsnet.ca. That's it for this week. Thanks to Arden Zwelling and Shai Davidi. You can follow Arden Zwelling at Arden Zwelling, Shai Davidi at Shai Davidi, and our producer Sam McKee is at Sam A. McKee on Twitter. We will be back next week on At the Letters.